make a contribution to the program at theguyjamesshow.com, and we hope you will. Thanks for being with us today. You are listening to The Guy James Show and Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow Jones had a triple-digit drop in trading today. We'll have the latest numbers near the close of Wall Street coming up in our business block. A group of moderate Republican congressmen met with President Bush earlier this week to express their concerns about the Iraq war and its effect on their party. In the private meeting, they told the president that conditions in Iraq need to improve dramatically or else Republicans will desert him in their support for the war. President Bush is urging Congress to give his troop buildup in Iraq a chance to work. The top U.S. commander, General David Petraeus, will report in September on how effective the troop buildup is. President Bush is now willing to allow benchmarks in the Iraq War funding bill to measure progress in Iraq. The president is under pressure politically to negotiate with Congress. House members are expected to vote today on a two-step war funding bill that President Bush has promised to veto. The measure would provide roughly half the funding until July, and then the second half of the war money would be given after a progress report and a second congressional vote. Vice President Dick Cheney spent the night at a U.S. military base in Iraq. He defended the Bush administration's decision to extend military deployments. He went on to the United Arab Emirates. After a decade in office, British Prime Minister Tony Blair announced he will step down on June 27th. He said he did what he thought was right in standing by the U.S. after the September 11th attacks and joining the U.S. as an ally in the Iraq War. Russian President Vladimir Putin made a blunt and vague statement which criticized the U.S. and linked the American policies to the Third Reich. He accused the United States of having, quote, disrespect for human life, claims to global exclusiveness, and dictate. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, who travels to Moscow next week, described the Russian president's recent moves to roll back reforms and to consolidate power as troubling. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez was questioned by the House Judiciary Committee today about the 8 fired U.S. prosecutors scandal. He admitted that he didn't remember any new details. Republicans want the investigation to be closed. The U.S. Treasury Department is investigating controversial filmmaker Michael Moore, who took 6 September 11th workers to Cuba for a new documentary on health care. He may have violated the U.S. trade embargo, which restricts travel to Cuba. Moore has not commented yet. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Purdue Pharma, the maker of OxyContin, a powerful painkiller, and three of its current and former executives, pleaded guilty to misleading the public. They were fined $634 million by the federal government for their claims that the drug was less addictive and less subject to abuse than other prescription pain drugs. The chairman and CEO of HBO lost his job yesterday after he was arrested over the weekend in Las Vegas on suspicion of assaulting his girlfriend. The Los Angeles Times reported he had previously been involved in a battery case 16 years ago in which HBO paid a female employee $400,000 in a settlement. The founder of JetBlue Airways, who was also CEO, was replaced by the company's president today. A few months ago, weather-related problems forced the airline to basically shut down for several days, and customers complained about being stranded in planes on the runway for up to 10 hours. Many retailers report weak retail sales in April. Walmart had the worst monthly same-store sales in 28 years. The U.S. trade deficit reached a six-month high of nearly $64 billion in March, and one of Michael Dell's original computers from the 1980s will be on display at the Smithsonian. Light sweet crude trading at $61.81 a barrel, and near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow is down 148 points, the Nasdaq down 43. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It's the week in review. All topics are valid, and we've got a lot to discuss. As the Bush approval rating nears its lowest ever, it's down around 28% now. If it drops five more points, we can be under Nixon's. We have Republicans going up to the White House giving the president kind of what they did to Richard Nixon some 30 years ago, telling him he's got to moderate his position on the war. And so Bush has said that he will accept some benchmarks, as it were, but it's not quite clear what he's accepting. One of the things he will promise to veto is the new bill out to give funding in a two-stage process. It would give $43 billion right now, but in 2 months, in July, the Democrats would re-vote, and if no benchmarks are met, they wouldn't necessarily give the next $53 billion. That half measure, Bush has again threatened to veto, saying, in effect, as the old song goes, give war a chance. Tony Blair stepping down, understandably. It's really kind of sad because apart from his acting as George Bush's poodle, he wasn't such a bad British prime minister, but his poodle actions have caused him to step down, and I think it's time for new leadership in Great Britain. Meanwhile, while America is deciding whether to keep forces in Iraq or not, the Iraqi parliament wants to go on a two-month summer vacation. They seem to think that they're in no rush. They don't have to do anything. They don't have to make Sunnis and Shiites get along, revise the Constitution, or give oil revenues to split them up. They're just going to take a little vacation. That's not making Americans very happy. Even Dick Cheney in Iraq is trying to encourage them not to go on break. But we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Meanwhile, the reverberations from the war continue in all kinds of ways. George Bush, who claimed that if we fight them over there, we won't have to fight them over here, has to explain why some New Jersey Americans, mostly illegal immigrants, but at least one citizen and one naturalized American, or at least a green card holder in New Jersey, were plotting to blow up Fort Dix. Apparently, they have been upset by the United States war tactics and have believed the internet jihadists, and now want to join in the fight. I think we're seeing now how, as we fight in Iraq, we actually create more terrorists here, just as dictators like Vladimir Putin consolidate power while at the same time comparing Bush to the Third Reich. I think he'd have a lot more difficulty being such a dictator if our government would respect human rights as it used to, mostly. It's in our Constitution. But when Alberto Gonzalez was asked whether there were any prisoners that were held without habeas corpus, he said, quote, I haven't really thought about that. He hasn't thought about that. The Attorney General of the United States, the leading law enforcement officer for the United States, hasn't even considered whether or not habeas corpus, which is guaranteed in the United States Constitution, that old Latin right that predates the United States by hundreds of years that says, if you're taken and put in jail, the government has to give you a reason. Habeas corpus, you have the body, you give a reason. You can't just grab people off the streets and throw them in jail without trial for life, as happened in the former Soviet Union. Our Attorney General hasn't thought about it. Meanwhile, the student loan programs are hopefully being fixed. We have the House Democrats passed a bill, largely bipartisan bill, to fix some of the kickbacks that were going on in the system. In a reading program for kindergarten to third graders, the execs, appointed by, of course, our wonderful Education Secretary Margaret Spelling, each of them got $1 million or so from the companies they were using in the reading. All of them said, hey, well, it wasn't against the law to get these kickbacks. What's the problem with it? They don't seem to understand that taxpayer money is supposed to go to the kids, not to the administrators. New York and New Jersey are having a fight over gun laws. I want to talk about that. New York Mayor Bloomberg has recognized that a lot of New York City's illegal guns come from the state of Virginia. So he's been sending investigators down to Virginia in plain clothes to buy guns that would otherwise be illegal. One of his tricks is to take a man, and he asks about the gun, picks one out, then a woman comes forward, pays for it all, has no problem with her record. She fills out the forms, I should say, but then the man comes back and pays cash for it. And, of course, the gun dealers never ask about the man. Virginia has said to New York, in effect, stay out of our business. Stop trying to prevent illegal gun sales. If people have to die in New York because of these illegal guns, well, tough. They'll just die. But don't hurt Virginia gun owners. God forbid. What else is going on in the country? Well, we have Dana Rohrabacher. Did you hear about this? We're going to play some of the transcript later on in the hour. Dana Rohrabacher is a congressman from California, from Orange County, and he was defending extraordinary rendition. Remember that word? That's the cutesy euphemism for torture, specifically for sending people out to other countries to be tortured. It's kind of like outsourcing torture. You kidnap someone, you recognize it's kind of hard to torture them in the United States, so you send them somewhere else to be tortured. And Rohrabacher was defending it. I mean, not just saying, you know, well, I regret it. But no, defending the practice. I want to play for you that later on in the hour. And the first thing I want to go into, though, after the break, is I want to discuss the ninth prosecutor. Alberto Gonzalez has said all along that there were only 8 U.S. prosecutors that were fired. Now, he denied they were for political reasons, you recall, but he can't recall who chose them. He has no idea who chose them. He has no idea why they were chosen. And they, of course, are some of the best prosecutors in the country. Now we find out that Todd Graves, U.S. attorney in Kansas City, Missouri, was also asked to leave, and asked to leave abruptly in March 2006. He didn't even have time to finish a prosecution that he wanted to do, one that I would think Republicans would be quite sympathetic on. It's a prosecution of a man who killed a woman and kidnapped her 8-month-year-old fetus. Actually, I guess cut the fetus out and kept it. It's a gruesome, gruesome crime. Wouldn't let him go forward. Why? Well, it has nothing to do, they say, with the fact that he refused to prosecute people who were registering people to vote. You see, Missouri, as you may recall in the Senate race, had a very close Senate race. The race between Jim Talent and Claire McCaskill was neck and neck all the way. It was Republican Jim Talent was the incumbent. Claire McCaskill was the Democrat running against him. Claire McCaskill, you may remember, won the race by a very, very small margin. And frankly, it was the race that was close neck and neck for months and months and months. The Virginia race came out at the end. But that was the race, the Missouri race, that really, they were within 2 points of each other all year long. It was a crucial race. So a attorney general in the Justice Department, a guy by the name of Schlossman, decided that, hey, if you prosecute people who are registering people to vote, you might just make the difference in the Missouri election. U.S. Attorney Todd Graves, a moderate Republican but an honest one, would have nothing to do with such a political lawsuit. And so he was thrown out, and guess who he was replaced by? The same Schlossman that wanted to prosecute people for registering people to vote. I'm going to give you all the details on that and all the other stories right after the break. Folks, if you want to join in, you have any questions on any of these topics, you want to give your 2 cents, I want to hear from you. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
This is a message from NoMoreVictims.org.
In the spirit of Mother's Day and its origin, you can help a child this year by donating to No More Victims as a gift to your mother this Mother's Day. No More Victims brings war-injured Iraqi children to the United States to receive the medical treatment they need. You will help bring Sally, who lost both of her legs in the war in Iraq.
My mother used to say all the time, I look after people's kids because one day I know somebody will look after my kids. I feed people's kids because I know somebody one day will feed my kids. That informs a lot of who I am as a mother. That I know that I'm not only parenting Mavis and Duncan, but I'm responsible for every child that comes through.
Honor your mother. Go to NoMoreVictims.org. Give today.
It must have been prayer meeting with Reverend Brother Bob.
See, hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
You absolutely know that you cannot mention Robert Sunday without conjuring me. This is the known fact.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, sometimes I do it on purpose.
You know, the thing that kills me, you know, God just continues to punk Robert Sunday. After time, after time, and it goes back for years, you know. Let's talk a minute about his business venture. From 91 to 94, he was involved in something called Calo Vita, and it was a multi-level marketing company that breeds that pyramid scheme.
Yeah, like Amway.
Sold beauty products and healthcare products. Oh, they had a product called Sea of Galilee Mud Mask.
No, they did not.
Oh, yes, they did.
You no.
Bob, as a heart attack, I'm serious.
Sea of Galilee Mud Mask?
Oh, yes, it was part of the product line.
Prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid, Wednesday nights, 6 to 9 p.m. here on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder, and say, everything's going to be okay. That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Well, there is now a ninth man in the U.S. prosecutor scandal. Actually, there probably are two more to come. That's the Inside Scoop, because when the names were given from Kyle Sampson, they were, of course, subpoenaed, the Justice Department redacted three names. Redacted, of course, is fancy language for crossing it out, for blackening the names. Well, one of those names, apparently, is Todd Graves, the former U.S. attorney from Kansas City, Missouri. And there are, as I said, likely to be two more to come. Now, the one thing that's consistent about each and every one of these prosecutors is all of them had to do with either prosecuting Republicans for corruption, failing, at least in Republican eyes, to prosecute Democrats for corruption, or involved in some kind of voting scandal. Of course, Todd Graves is no different. He twice was asked to prosecute, in fact, to indict some voting rights advocates. He refused to do so twice. Finally, Bradley J. Schlossman, the interim U.S. attorney, overruled him and prosecuted the voting rights advocates over his head. And around that time, Todd Graves was chosen to get rid of, to leave. Interestingly, Schlossman indicted the voter registration activists just weeks before last November's elections. How convenient, as the church lady might say.
If it were not politically based, of course, it could have been done a month later. But just a few weeks before the November elections was probably, they thought, just enough to scare away voters, to stop people from voting for Claire McCaskill. They lost. Claire McCaskill won. And, of course, her election, like that of every Democrat in the Senate, was just enough to give the Democrats a majority there. But here's Gonzalez's problem. He didn't mention Todd Graves. Three times in testimony, he referred to the resignations of only eight prosecutors. In fact, to the Senate, he testified, quote, to every U.S. attorney who was asked to resign, unquote, and then named the eight. Didn't name Todd Graves. What else are you hiding, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez? Republicans want to end the investigation. They do. Oh, you found out too much. Now they're prosecuting crimes. Remember Monica Goodling, that treasured graduate of Regent University, the 134th best law school in the country out of 134, the university that is sponsored by Pat Robertson. I don't even know if it's accredited or not. But apparently they care more about teaching Bible than teaching law, so I don't know why it is a law school. But that treasured graduate who pled the fifth, thus in effect admitting she committed a crime but saying she didn't want to say so because she would incriminate herself, now it looks like she's going to be given immunity and she'll have to sing like a bird. And Republicans want to end the investigation. The amazing thing is that they can say this with a straight face. I mean, how do they justify their constituents? Yeah, they're committing crimes. Yeah, I mean, it's a violation of the Hatch Act. The Hatch Act is that, I believe it's by Senator Orrin Hatch, a very conservative Republican from Utah, but it's the act that says that you can't use political considerations in hiring people for civil service positions in government. That's just not a factor. You can for the political positions, of course, but not for things like U.S. prosecutors who are supposed to be independent. Well, Monica Goodling apparently has been violating the Hatch Act, which is why she wants to plead the fifth. Attorney General Gonzalez, well, he's got memory problems. He can't seem to recall anything. He can't even figure out whether any of our people are being held without habeas corpus. Well, they are, Alberto Gonzalez. I assure you, they are. And then there are other Republicans and defending torture. Now, what's interesting is most of the time when you hear discussions of torture, you find even people like George Tenet saying, well, we don't torture anyone, but I'm not going to tell you what we do and what we don't do because, well, you might consider, you know, pulling someone's fingernails off torture. We don't consider it that. You know, you might consider waterboarding torture. We don't. This way he doesn't have to answer those questions. He just says, we don't torture. We just won't define what torture is. Apparently, if you don't use the rack, it's not torture. Who knows? But some Republicans will actually defend torture. Some Republicans will defend kidnapping people who have not had a trial, who have not even had an indictment, and holding them and then torturing them. Now, it sounds hard to believe, because after all, if you really have a criminal, all you have to do is indict the guy or the girl, they're mostly men. But you indict them and then you can go pick them up. I have no problem with, quote, kidnapping, unquote, people that we've indicted because it's not kidnapping. We've indicted them. They're supposed to stand trial for a crime. Let's go get them. No problem. But people we haven't indicted? Leave it to Dana Rohrabacher, Republican of Orange County, California, to defend the practice. Let's play a recent hearing with Dana Rohrabacher.
After 9/11, we established different operations because we needed to do it, because we knew at that time there were people who were willing to kill tens of thousands of other human beings because they hate our way of life. Now, we're only talking about the question at hand. We've looked at your report. We're talking about a minuscule number of people here as compared to the number of people who are being protected. And does that mean, and of the minuscule number of people, 100, 200 people, were being held in this way, How many of those have been mistreated? How many of those have actually suffered the type of unfair treatment because they themselves really aren't members of Al-Qaeda and they were just were their name was mistaken? For example, I know in one or two cases you have a man whose name was exactly the same name as a Muslim that was involved in Al-Qaeda. To the degree there are a few of those cases, we should do our best to make sure those cases don't exist, try to find a system to root them out. But here's the other shoe dropping. We are at war, and we've got to make sure that we do not let go 50 terrorists who will go out and plant a bomb in London and kill 20,000 people in order to protect that one person who we arrested accidentally because his name was the same. That's the type of unfortunate consequence. Well, I hope it's your families. I hope it's your families that suffer the consequences. Mr. Chairman, I will be very happy to talk to everybody afterwards if you'd like to talk to me. But in terms of the hearing, I'd like to make my points without having it animated. One person.
But your families who suffer the consequences. But let's go through Dana Rohrabacher's logic here. All right? He's saying that it's a small number of people, 100, 200 people, who are being held even though they're innocent, who are being held just because they've got the same name as someone who's mistaken. Oops. You know, we're trying our best. It's 100, 200 maximum. But we're at war, and we have to make sure we don't let them go, and they can go plant a bomb. And when the audience groans, well, I hope it's your families. Hope it's your families suffer the consequences. Here's the thing, Congressman Rohrabacher. If people are guilty, indict them. See, we have this thing called a system of justice, and I realize our attorney general's out to lunch, but the way it's supposed to work is U.S. prosecutors are supposed to make a case to a grand jury. And they go to the grand jury. There's only one side heard. That's why it's called an indictment. They go and they prove probable cause, which isn't a very high standard. It just shows they've probably committed the crime. And then you can go pick them up, and then they stand trial. That's how our system works. Heck, if you indict someone and you pick them up and they have the wrong name, then you have to let them go. That's why we have procedures like things called habeas corpus. We used to understand innocent until proven guilty in America. We used to understand that if we have to, we even let a guilty person go free rather than imprison an innocent person. But you know what? We don't even have to worry about that. If we have evidence, we indict. If we have indictments, we can go out and grab someone. If they show they have the wrong name, they get free. What is so hard about that to understand? It used to be called America. It used to be called our system of justice. We used to have respect for the Bill of Rights, which gives you a right to counsel and a right to know the charges against you and a right to habeas corpus. We used to have respect for that. Well, Dana Rohrabacher thinks that's obsolete, and without amending the Constitution, he just wants to ignore it. Let's listen to it, because he's actually trying to logically defend this point of view. Let's go on with the tape.
Person, if in order to protect the rights of one or two people, or five people, or 10 people who are mistakenly abducted because their names were the same, or because they went to a mosque that they didn't know where this thing was going on in the back room, if 10 of those people suffered those consequences, but in order for us to take 90 other people off the street who were intent and involved in plans that would slaughter tens of thousands of our citizens, I'm afraid that's the price we pay in a real world. And the United States, we're not ghouls. We don't want to torture somebody because he has a bad name. We want to get information from somebody that we think might want to kill our children and kill your children. And if you doubt our motives, you're welcome to. I know there's a lot of people who hate America, but when the pressure's on, for quite frankly, we have known all along that at times America has to go it alone, and people will try to find fault with us rather than trying to at least understand our morality.
And people were getting upset, and that's why the chairman had to bang down his gavel. Again, listen to his argument. If one or people or two people, listen how it grows, or five people or 10 people, if 10 people suffer the consequences of oops, being mistakenly kidnapped because the names were the same, or because they went to a mosque, or because they didn't know that anything was going in the back room, I'm afraid that's the price we pay. We don't want to torture somebody because he has a bad name, unquote. We don't want to, but, quote, we want to get information from somebody we think might want to kill our children and kill your children, unquote. So if we just torture everybody, heck, a few of them might be terrorists. If we'll just torture each and every one of us who happens to enter a mosque, well, then some people are going to be terrorists, and we're going to save some lives. He actually is making that argument. And then he says in the United States, we're not ghouls. Well, I'll tell you something. If we continue this guilt until proven innocent, torture even the innocent in the hopes that we actually are torturing some guilty too, then we are ghouls. Then we truly have lost our way. I mean, I have no problem with intelligence. I have no problem with going into these organizations and infiltrating them and trying to find out information, that's fine. Heck, the FBI's been doing that for a long time. Frankly, the CIA, unfortunately, does it to peace organizations like Quakers in Vermont that we know aren't plotting terrorist attacks, so they take it too far. But if you have reason to believe that there's a terrorist group, get a FISA warrant, infiltrate, do an indictment, and take these people off the street. The American system works. We don't have to go to the Soviet system, Congressman Rohrabacher, even though I know you want to. I'll bet, though, that if your children were tortured, you might not feel the same way. We're going to take another break, and then I've already got some callers on the line. If you want to join in, please call as well. It's easy to do. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. I fear that the Democrats are going to cave into Bush on continued funding for the Iraq war and occupation. But even if they don't, Bush may keep the funding going by way of an illegal maneuver he's been using about 1,000 times since he became president, and that's the use of a so-called presidential signing statement. It's quite conceivable that Bush will sign the next bill that comes to his desk dealing with the Iraq war, but this time he'll append one of his presidential asterisks and say, as he has many times before, that he's enforcing this only to the extent that it doesn't interfere with his powers as commander-in-chief. This could and should provoke a constitutional crisis, and to her credit, Nancy Pelosi is prepared for this. According to Daily Kos, she recently told a group of bloggers that Congress can take the president to court if he does this. The president really has only two choices when Congress delivers him a bill, at least according to the Constitution. He can sign it and therefore enforce it, or he can veto it. He can't sign it and then not enforce it. since he's sworn to uphold the laws of the land and to see that they're properly executed. But Bush hasn't been doing this, and this practice has to be stopped, and what better place to stop it than on cutting off funding for the Iraq War? I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Do you believe the environment is issue number one? Does the idea of genetically modified food cause you to lose your appetite? Do you prefer green over greed? Do rising sea levels and vanishing polar ice cause you concern about our planet and what we are doing to it? Would you like news with attitude on the environment, organics, renewable sources of energy? Well, then join me, John Fox, for Foxed Up. Weekdays, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. in the U.K., and 9 a.m. here in Sydney, where conversation radio becomes conservation radio, and we turn it straight up to 11, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the week in review. All topics are valid, whether you want to discuss Attorney General Gonzalez's incompetence, memory loss, or maliciousness, whether you want to go over Dana Rohrabacher's support of torture, whether you want to discuss George Bush's approval rating of 28%. Who are these people, and what planet are they from? If you want to discuss the bill right now, the Democratic bill, the so-called compromise bill that George Bush has threatened to veto on the war in Iraq, or anything, Kansas tornadoes, New Jersey and terrorists, New York and Virginia fighting each other, whatever it is, toll-free numbers 877-4 head-on. Let's go to Ray in Baton Rouge. Ray, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark.
Hello, hello.
Mark, this is Ray.
Hello, Ray.
Can you hear me? Hey, can you hear me?
Fine.
Okay, the reason I called, I was looking at something on Father Lawrence Martin Jenko. I don't know if you remember him. He was one of the people that was held hostage in Beirut back in 1990. Well, let's see, he died in 1996, but he was held...
80s, right?
1985, yes.
Yeah, in the 80s we had hostages in Lebanon, right?
He was arrested, or he was held hostage by some Shiite whom he
right.
became friends with before they let him go. When he was released, the country of Lebanon had to pay $340 some odd million to him for compensation and damages. And we don't pay anything when we make a mistake like that.
Lebanon paid him $340 million, really?
I'm looking at Wikipedia, and it says that he received $14.6 million in damages from Iran for the 18 months he'd been held hostage. That was $14.6 million in compensatory damages to him and $300 million in punitive damages to him and his siblings.
If it's true, I certainly did not know that, and that's strange and interesting, makes you wonder.
I met Marty back in, it must have been around 88 when... Bush was running for his second term. Bush Sr. was running for his second term. He was speaking at the Pax Christi National Assembly. We were supposed to have Cesar Chavez, but he was on a fast and going to New Orleans to give a talk at a dinner. You know, just doesn't seem too fast-like, you know. Anyway, he spoke, and he was a beautiful speaker. He was very calm, talked about his situation. He wrote a book after that called Bound to Forgive. And I'd recommend people read it, see his viewpoint from a viewpoint of a Christian pacifist. But anyway, also I had another comment about Michael Moore.
I don't know what to think about that. I mean, I really need to know more information, honestly. I'm a little concerned by what psychologists call the Stockholm Syndrome. It's what's supposed to have affected Patty Hearst when you're kidnapped by people and you're held for a very long time and you start to sympathize with your kidnappers. But I really don't know his situation, and I don't want to judge it until I know the details.
His story was he had worked through a lot of stuff. He made a rosary out of stuff he had in his pocket, you know, to pray. And he became friends, basically friends with these Shiites.
I guess it's the smartest thing to do if someone's kidnapping you to become friends with them.
He was nonviolent the whole time. What are they going to do?
Yeah.
You know, so he was following the teachings of Jesus, who said, don't resist injury. Anyway, happened was...
Are you a pacifist, Ray?
I am.
You are. Okay.
Fair enough.
Because it's just a philosophy. I'm not a pacifist.
Okay. Well, let me just
people who are.
Marty talked at his he gave his talk at the keynote address at for Pax Christi National Assembly in New Orleans, and he said that towards the end they asked him if he could forgive them what they had done to him, and he looked at them and said, before I could forgive you, I'd have to ask God to forgive me for the hatred I had when you first first caught me, first put me under the cars and traveled, drove me here and there and so forth, but anyway, I just had to be around this guy the whole weekend that he was in New Orleans.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I respect the idealism of pacifists, but I think we live in a world that where pure pacifism doesn't work. I wish it did.
We've never really tried pure pacifism.
Well, but other groups have. I mean, the Tibetan Buddhists.
We've always had a military to back us up.
You're right. The United States has never tried pacifism, Ray. You're right. But other groups have. I mean, when Tibet was conquered by China, the Tibetan Buddhists strongly believe in pacifism. They did not resist. Some of them even set themselves aflame in what must have been a gruesome way to resist. But it didn't work. I mean, China took over Tibet, and Tibet is conquered today. I'm not saying that war is always just. In fact, I think war is rarely just, but I do think there are some just wars.
No, there's no such thing as a just war. Anyway, let me change the point and subject for a second.
Go ahead.
Michael Moore went to Cuba. He's being sued by the government, or prosecuted for carrying out the Good Samaritan law, basically.
Our government has forbidden any American from going to Cuba, and people I know that have gone to Cuba, they usually go to Canada, and then they change planes.
Well,
it's kind of a difficult way to get there.
Why spend the money to go to Canada first and then down to Cuba? But anyway,
it's against the law. I mean, I didn't say it's a smart law. It's a pretty stupid law as far as I'm concerned.
Christ broke just about every law in the book.
That's true. But when you practice civil disobedience, you have to be willing to go to jail for it.
Obedience from the word go. In fact, he even rose from the dead, if you believe that. But anyway, that's the ultimate act of civil disobedience.
Yeah, but what's your view on Michael Moore's act? You think it was the right thing to do,
I think it was the right thing to do.
He may go to jail for it. He may go to jail for it. I mean, I can't think of anyone they'd rather put in jail than Michael Moore.
Well, that's true, but the problem
civil disobedience is you have to be willing to go to jail. I mean, if you're going to practice civil disobedience, I mean, Martin Luther King went to jail and wrote some brilliant writing from that jail.
Yeah.
He may well go there.
Thinkers have to look at that, as a possibility.
Pick your battles, obviously. And civil disobedience is a question of picking your battles. Now, I don't know all the circumstances of when he went down there, or if he technically violated the law or not. I suspect he did. And if so, I mean, Michael Moore is enough of a public figure that, Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, they're all chomping at the bit to stick him in jail. So he must have known that could happen. And if you're willing to take the risk, then that's the risk you take.
See, the problem I see is that we don't see that nonviolence is good. Every time somebody commits,
I see nonviolence as good. I think violence is an absolute last resort. I mean, certainly I didn't support the war in Iraq, but I did support the war against the Taliban. I'm not a pacifist.
It's like the nth plus one. We haven't even gotten to B yet in Iraq.
Well, that's true. I don't know. Listen, the war in Iraq is a terrible example because we attacked a country that had never attacked us, and was no threat to us.
And that was connected to Al Qaeda.
No, they were awful. There's no excuse for the war in Iraq. But the way I know I'm not a pacifist is that I supported, and frankly still support, trying to catch Osama bin Laden, even if we have to use violence to do that. I think that's otherwise we just open ourselves up to more and more attacks. So while I've always been opposed to the war in Iraq, I can't say that I don't believe in self-defense, even when it involves violence. I do. I mean, if a country invades the United States of America, as they did on September 11th, and kills 3,000 of our citizens, I think you have to respond.
Well, the jury is still out on who was involved on 9/11.
I don't see the jury out, Ray, but that we may have a difference of opinion on that as well. No, okay. I really don't see the jury out on that question. I really don't. But any more than I see the jury out on weapons of mass destruction. I mean, Iraq didn't have them. Or connections with Al-Qaeda, Iraq didn't have those too. But I think when you're looking at pacifism, you have to look beyond even the specifics of 9/11 and just ask yourself as a general principle, assume someone comes in and murders 3,000 Americans. Should the United States respond with a military response? I think the answer is yes.
You mean killing 655,000 Iraqis?
Well, the Iraq War has no justification. I just want to be clear. I'm only justifying the Afghani War.
But we've got
the Iraq
War
has no justification.
We can, I mean, if you wanted to go back in time, you know, say, well, you know, if you look at Iraq or the situation we created in Iraq, everybody's got a reason to stop George Bush.
You're talking about in Iraq?
In Iraq, right.
Yeah, I'm not defending the war in Iraq at all. I've been against the war in Iraq consistently for 4 years on the radio. I'm just saying that the reason I'm not a pacifist, again, whether or not you believe that Osama bin Laden attacked us on 9/11, and I believe he did, the principle is one of self-defense. It's in the United Nations Charter, and it says that every nation, when attacked, has a right to respond. Now, you don't have to agree with that. A true pacifist consistently says if someone attacks you, you simply take the attack. You literally turn the other cheek. I just think for a country, it's very hard to live up to Jesus' teachings.
I agree. But, I mean, you know, if you don't try to live up to it, you never will. It's like if you don't shoot the moon, then
I think that if you're a persecuted minority, that's when nonviolence is really useful. I mean, when you look at either whether it's Gandhi or Martin Luther King.
A minority is already handicapped. You know, they wouldn't have the money to do that, you know, or the justification. So, you know, you can say, well, these guys were fools because they believed in nonviolence or pacifism.
Well, but I think it works. Sometimes nonviolence is very powerful. I mean, the civil rights movement of the United States is perhaps the greatest example. If, you know, black power had had its way, and if there had been violence against whites throughout the country in the 1960s, I don't think we would ever have achieved civil rights. It was Martin Luther King following the teachings of Gandhi, following the teachings of pacifism and nonviolence, in my view, that is the reason why we had the successes of the 60s. Now, we haven't certainly fully achieved equality by any stretch, but I don't think we would have had any successes at all if it hadn't been for nonviolence, because I think nonviolence appeals to a democratic country. And the same is true with England. It appealed to England when India was fighting for independence. I'm not sure that nonviolence works against an enemy that's you know, bound to destroy you. And I do think among certain radical Islamic sects, and I certainly don't consider the majority of Islam this way, but against a certain small minority, growing, unfortunately, of Islamic sects, I don't think nonviolence would work. I think they are out to destroy us. And they, and only them, I'm willing to use violence against.
Okay. Well, I'm going to shut up now. You got other people calling.
No, listen, I appreciate your call, and I appreciate the exchange, and I hope you feel like I gave you a chance to say your views.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ray. Call in again anytime, all right?
Okay, Mark.
All right, let me go to Francesca on the line. Francesca, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Yes, hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing good.
This is a wide-ranging discussion you're having, and it's something that, you know, you could really, I'd love to talk about more in terms of the nonviolence question, but I would like to really just go back to what you said about the Afghanistan war and our attack on the country. You know, it surprised me to hear you say these things because you're so precise and so knowledgeable about all the details about Washington, what's going on with the legislation and so on. But, you know, let me just remind you, you know, the Taliban were not the ones that attacked us at 9/11.
No, but they certainly housed and supported Al-Qaeda.
It was Al-Qaeda, and it was a certain, we don't even know really for sure if it was actually these individuals. We don't know. They were mostly Saudi Arabians that were said to be the attackers, and some of those, the identity of those men hasn't been fully verified. Afghanistan wasn't, what you said was actually pretty much, you were just saying that this country attacked us on 9/11, so we have to go to war against them. That is not the case whatsoever. And now we've killed probably 600,000 or more in Afghanistan. Again, and it's changed.
I don't think we've killed that many in Afghanistan.
Now we have it as a vendetta against the Taliban, which are granted a horrible group of people, very extreme, very cruel to women, very, very counter civilization. However, they were also a creation, a byproduct of the CIA, you know, in our war against Russia that we conducted in a third-party country. I mean, we funded them. We gave them weapons. And now we're going back and fighting them. So there's a lot of double...
You said a lot of different things, but let me parse them out, and then we'll continue the discussion.
We are not fighting the people who attacked us in 9/11 when we fight in Afghanistan. That is
Let me back up and tell you where I agree and disagree, and then you know, we'll talk some more here, okay? I agree with you. We definitely funded Osama bin Laden, among others, back in the war against the Soviet Union.
They were the Mujahideen, right? They were the Mujahideen.
You're exactly right. I'm agreeing with you. They were the Mujahideen. The CIA did help a number of them, including Osama bin Laden, taught them how to use finger anti-aircraft missiles to fight the Soviets. There's no question that we did that.
And as many of the Islamic radical groups that you talk about, Hamas, Hezbollah, and so on, were also formed during the Cold War with a lot of prodding and
encouragement
by the US.
I don't dispute that. But I do dispute this. I do dispute your questioning who did this attack. I mean, I have to tell you, as someone who worked in Congress. Well, look, you can't know anything 100%. I know even very skeptical Democratic lawmakers, including every one of them that voted against the war in Iraq. There was only one person, Barbara Lee, who voted against the war in Afghanistan. And when I hear Barney Frank and Maxine Waters and John Conyers and other very, very liberal, very people I respect, people to my left, in fact, when I hear that they saw the evidence was overwhelming that bin Laden was behind this, and bin Laden took, you know, he certainly took, he admitted that he did it. And then, of course, we know the people who were on the planes. I don't think we have to doubt that
Al-Qaeda
did this.
We don't really know. There's questions, a lot of questions about who was actually on the plane, because there's some people with the same names walking around saying, I wasn't the one. But aside from that, we can put that aside for now, okay? And just agree.
Well, then we have to come to the question that you raised.
Let's say that Al-Qaeda and Bin Laden.
But then you raise another question, and you raise the question of the Taliban. And I don't think, again, there's any question that the Taliban was heavily supportive of Al-Qaeda, and not just supportive, but actually allowing Al-Qaeda in many ways to run the government in Afghanistan.
I don't know that there's proof of that. I've never heard
of that. Mullah Omar.
Also, you have to admit that there's a great Saudi Arabian influence. There was people from other countries.
Absolutely.
Pakistan has been tolerating the Taliban also. And so you really are talking about something that's rather amorphous. It's not a nation state that we're up against. And in the underlying issue here is, what do you do against terrorism? Terrorism, by definition, isn't something you can combat with an army. By definition, it's never going
to work. I
agree.
It's a political solution.
Who would never have won the American Revolution if it weren't true? That guerrilla warfare.
I agree. But here's my question. How would you respond to an armed terrorist group that is being housed and supported by a nation state who refuses to give up the...
Mark, you know very well that we have special operations people that go into places like Iran, they go into places like Uzbekistan or wherever, and they can go and find these people.
Well, we try to do that. Listen, Bill Clinton said... Bill Clinton sent cruise missiles into Afghanistan, and he certainly did the right thing in 1998, and he failed to get him.
I'm sorry, I refuse to believe, okay, that with the money we put into the CIA and all these international information networks, that we don't know where these people are. We couldn't have caught them right away. We waited a long time before we launched any kind of, you know, ventures to find bin Laden. We didn't do anything for like a year to stop the flow of money going to them.
Well, I'm not sure which year you're talking about.
It was at least
which year you're talking about, because I don't think we're that good, honestly.
The money, and there was clear-cut evidence very soon after 9/11, within a few months, that there were Swiss bank accounts, that there was ties to bin Laden, that, you know, money was flowing so they could buy arms, and nothing was done for a year. And then by then, they could easily move their accounts around under different names, different locations. So there was plenty of warning for them to go further underground.
I would like to see information on the money very much. I do know, I mean, obviously indictments, things like that take time.
and freezing bank accounts.
It's a matter of closing the accounts. It was a matter of freezing bank accounts. There was international interest in this. There were different organizations willing
to do that.
I'll
tell you this. This I don't know, so I'd love to see. If you post on my blog.
That's how you fight terrorism. That's how you stop the
weapons. Well, you fight terrorism in lots of ways. But I'd love to see this information on the money.
Sacrifice a whole country. Why sacrifice all we lost less than 3,000 people. We have now killed a good million people, and we haven't even found bin Laden. I mean, that's one of the biggest historical.
Well, again, I don't. I think we've killed hundreds of thousands.
No, honey, we've killed a million.
It seems to me there's enough bad that we can prove that we know
ago,
to be true.
A year ago,
but we're beginning to exaggerate.
The British estimate that the Royal Institute of Doctors or whatever they're called, they documented 600,000, and they admitted that that was a very modest figure. That was over a year ago. Okay, we've continued.
Yeah, I don't think it's been a million. But what they documented, 600,000, could have included people who left. But don't get me wrong, I agree that we've killed hundreds of thousands.
Afghanistan
and mostly in Iraq.
A million is not a very exaggerated estimate, okay? But the point is, that's a whole lot more than 3,000. What's an American life worth? Is an American life worth more than an Afghani life? Is an American life worth more than an Iraqi life?
I think we've killed most of them in Iraq. Unfortunately, we have 10 times the troops in Iraq that we do in Afghanistan. I think if we had really focused on Afghanistan, we might have captured Osama bin Laden at Tora Bora or today.
We didn't obviously go in the way that we should have to capture him. Look, the Israelis found the leader of the Kurds when they went to Africa. They duped him into meeting them, and they took him back to Turkey and put him in prison without a blinking an eye.
I think they're probably better at it than we are. I'm sorry to say. I think the Mossad is better, is more accomplished than our CIA sometimes.
It would have been possible, very easy for the U.S. to have Mossad, who we all already fund, to go and find bin Laden. There's countless ways. There was a reason we didn't find bin Laden. There was a reason they wanted to go to these wars. There was a different agenda going on here, and it has nothing to do with 9/11. Nothing.
Okay. Let me just say where I agree and where I disagree. There's no question in my mind. Hold on. There's no question in my mind that the Iraq War has nothing to do with 9/11. I've talked on this show frequently about the fact that January 30th, 2001, George Bush was dividing up Iraqi oil fields. We know that. We've seen the map. It's in The Price of Loyalty by Ron Susskind, and we have Secretary O'Neill to thank for that. We know that from Richard Clark. That the plan, and we know from George Tenet now, that the plan to go into Iraq long, long predated Afghanistan. We know that Richard Pearl was saying someone in Iraq is punished for 9/11. So you're absolutely right that Iraq has nothing to do with Afghanistan, and we were determined to go to war there no matter what. I agree with you on that. Where I think I disagree is on the war in Afghanistan, because that was something that, frankly, the Iraq nuts and the neocons and the PNAC people, they didn't even want to go to Afghanistan. They wanted to concentrate on Iraq first. So while I agree with you completely on Iraq, I do think Afghanistan is a different case, and I do think it's a case of defense.
And also, you have to admit, we've been there for over 4 years, and we haven't succeeded, okay? Don't you think that it's time to call it quits?
In Afghanistan or Iraq?
Afghanistan.
I'm ready to call it quits in Iraq. I've been ready for four years now.
Focus on Afghanistan, because people don't talk about Afghanistan enough, okay?
Let's talk about Afghanistan. I actually think we've achieved something in Afghanistan. Now, don't get me wrong. The Taliban is coming back, and they're largely doing so because we've ignored it. Afghanistan, people don't realize. I know you realize, Francesca, but maybe our listeners don't know, has 50% more population than Iraq, 50% more territory than Iraq, and it's even more difficult because it has all those mountains.
Well,
so here you have a country
it's never developed the way that Iraq did. It doesn't have the level of culture.
And we have 10 times the troops in Iraq.
Right.
So it's and yet with that very small number of troops, 15,000 in Afghanistan, the Taliban is no longer ruling over most of the country. They are coming back.
As you said,
I would actually support more troops in Afghanistan.
Actually,
you may be surprised to learn.
They're in parliament. There's members of the Taliban who are warlords that are in parliament. They're doing what they want to do. It's a very difficult place to govern. No one's ever succeeded in governing Afghanistan.
That's certainly true, but I think Karzai's actually given a chance. Francesca, it's been a great talking with you. I'm afraid my time is running out, but I'm more than happy to debate with you in the future on this or any other topic. I'm really glad you called.
Okay,
I just
thank you very much. All right.
My time is running out. And hey, Francesca, post some of those things, like about the money, which I didn't know. Post that on my blog. Let me take a look at your sources, and you know, if I can confirm them, I'll be happy to report it here on the Inside Scoop.
It's been a really good show. I want to thank Ray and Francesca for calling. I don't mind people challenging me. I really don't. I frankly, I kind of like it. You got to let me get a word edgewise sometimes. But I hope that each of you will call back and that we can discuss this in the future. I am not a pacifist, and that may differ with some of you, and that's okay. But one thing I've been sure of from the day I started on the air is a war in Iraq is a huge mistake, and it's creating more terrorists than it's ever conquered. I actually supported the war in Afghanistan, but not the war in Iraq, and I never will, and it is time to go home. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on The Horn. This is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow Jones had a triple-digit drop in trading today. We'll have the closing numbers on Wall Street coming up in our business block. President Bush is now willing to allow benchmarks in the Iraq War funding bill to measure progress in Iraq. The president is under pressure politically to negotiate with Congress. House members are expected to vote later today on a two-step war funding bill that President Bush has promised to veto. The measure would provide roughly half the funding until July, and then the second half of the war money would be given after a progress report and a second congressional vote. Defense Secretary Robert Gates said such a plan would be disruptive. A group of moderate Republican congressmen met with the president earlier this week to express their concerns about the Iraq war and its effect on their party. In the private meeting, they told the president that conditions in Iraq need to improve dramatically, or else the Republicans will desert him in their support for the war. President Bush is urging Congress to give his troop buildup in Iraq a chance to work. He said, quote, "Why don't we wait and see what happens?" The top U.S. commander, General David Petraeus, will report in September on how effective the troop buildup is. Vice President Dick Cheney spent the night at a U.S. military base in Iraq near former Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein's hometown of Tikrit. Cheney defended the Bush administration's decision to extend military deployments. He said it is, quote, vital to the mission. Cheney went on to the United Arab Emirates. After a decade in office, British Prime Minister Tony Blair announced he will step down on June 27th. He said he did what he thought was right in standing by the U.S. after the September 11th attacks and joining the U.S. as an ally in the Iraq War. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez was questioned by the House Judiciary Committee today about the 8 fired U.S. prosecutors scandal. He admitted